So the city of Port Townsend believes orcas have inherent rights, a claim they made in a proclamation this week. Now, the movement, according to the mayor, has been emerging as an emerging trend, I guess, in law for the last several years. It's called the Rights of Nature Movement. And it effectively believes that nature has the right to legal protection and representation by a lawyer. Now, I'm not an expert in this. It is a new concept to me. So I thought we'd actually hear from someone who's part of the movement. Kevin Schneider serves as counsel for the Colorado-based Earth Law Center, and he joins me now. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
So I think I'm with you, you know, generally speaking, as far as the environmental positions, but I'm not sure I understand the argument about legal rights, as at least as the city of Port Townsend is claiming. So can you just first give us sort of this big picture explanation of what exactly is the rights of nature movement or the doctrine?
Well, so the rights of nature, while it is pretty new in the U.S., has gained quite a bit of traction around the world, particularly in the last 10 years. So, for example, you have in Ecuador, which has in its constitution the protection of the rights of nature. And this has been litigated in recent cases, adding context, you know, what does this really mean in practice? Mm-hmm. That's still developing. But what is clear, I think, is there's this real interest in much the way that a corporation, right, is a legal person, can have certain rights and obligations and go to court and do various things. The argument is that, well, hey, nature, which we all depend on, which we are part of, really deserves some kind of recognition as well, because right now, nature, broadly speaking, the environment, wild animals and animals generally living within the environment are essentially property, right? They don't even really have the capacity for rights. And so the Port Townsend Declaration really follows on a trend in recent years of expanding interest in rights of nature, but also for wild animals. And, you know, like the mayor said, we, you know, have a legal reality now where the natural world is treated essentially as an object. And I think we see a lot of growing political will to say, you know what, that really should not be the case, really should begin to change.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference, at least the way that I'm seeing it, there's a difference between saying that people have the right to protect nature, like there is a reason why someone might fight to keep development from going on land that otherwise has benefits to a community or to a nation even, versus arguing like a river itself has a legal right. And the way that I'm at least reading how some people are talking about this is that there is no difference. It's not that the people enjoying the river have rights. It's that the river itself has a right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of this is just an outflow of kind of our legal system, the fact that, you know, the powers that be really over generations have decided to divide the world in this way, essentially between a person and a thing. And now, fortunately, us human beings all can have certain rights. Mm-hmm. That was not always the case. So, you know, the law has been on this evolutionary course for, you know, in particularly the last, couple hundred years.
Sure.
And we think that this really fits into this reevaluation of the bigger picture of the human relationship to the natural world, because the goal is not to kind of exalt nature and put it above humans. It's really to recognize that humanity needs some breaks and some sort of, structures in place that honestly prevent us from ourselves in a lot of ways. We have runaway, we have an environmental law system that is really kind of been, you know, so fragmented and really doesn't carry out the goals that it was, you know, in the 70s. You had the Clean Water Act, you had all these laws.
Yeah, but those are political issues, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's not necessarily due to the structure, per se, of environmental law. It's because of, you know, the activists on either side of a particular issue and politicians getting involved. Because I guess that there are obvious implications to claiming that a river has a right the same way that a human has a right, because there's ownership of land. So why wouldn't the right just extend to the owners of the land?
Yeah, right. So these are very thorny and complex issues. But again, I think it's worth looking comparatively at other countries that are actively developing these models. The St. Lawrence River in Canada a year or two ago won this designation. The Whanganui River, there's a river in New Zealand that was given this declaration a number of years ago, and that was
what's the declaration? Just if you could clarify when you say it's
recognizing a river as having rights, much like you were asking. So I think the point there is that there's a lot to learn from what other folks are doing. In particular, I think what's very important to the Earth Law Center and to many of the folks involved in this is finding ways to give life to indigenous values, because the fact is that in many of these cases, you have a rich network of tribal communities that that have had these kinds of ideas as part of their legal traditions for a very long time, and are now finding opportunities for it to, either on their own territories to pass these laws, which is happening, but also to engage with the political process, and then ultimately, the legal process as well, potentially in the courts.
Kevin Schneider joining me on the line. He's counsel for the Colorado-based Earth Law Center. We're talking about the rights of nature movement, or the rights of nature doctrine, effectively giving nature rights. And in a lot of ways, it also extends, it sounds like, to animals as well. Aren't the implications, though, or at least the slippery slope of this, of if you're going to give a river rights, why not give a vegetable rights or fruit rights? Because, you can generally make the same argument, couldn't you?
Well, I think that when we're talking about a river, when we're talking about, the rights of nature laws that have been passed and are being developed, they speak in terms of, for example, a river's right to thrive, to regenerate itself, to engage in, not have its cycles,
protection,
vital cycles interrupted. And I think that's not the sort of thing we can really imagine for, like a vegetable or just anything. Although I think the slippery slope concern is a valid one. And I think that I've seen it in my own work over the years, advocating for animals, advocating for the environment generally. You do see this response of, well, what next? And I think that while we do have to be very conscious about where we're going and, engage really all sides in this kind of ongoing debate, I don't think we can let, the fear of change completely stop us, because I think the fact is, if we did, there are countless cases in the, for example, human rights context, gay marriage being a recent, I think, really good example, when that was passed, and still to this day, even though it's been signed into law and, cemented, you have people that say that's a slippery slope and will cause XYZ problems. So,
And I hear you on that point, and I guess my pushback to that would be the legal system that we enjoy is for humans. Now, to your point, and I think it's valid to say that, well, not all humans have been treated equally. That's correct, and that's where sort of the politics of it get involved and legal protections as a system get involved. But just from our legal system, it was never intended to give rights to animals or to nature. And I would argue that if that was the intent, it would have been like our legal system would have unfolded in a slightly different way, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the only way that I think most people can conceptualize this, I think, is by looking at it through the lens of how it works for humans. And I promise I'm not trolling you with this question, but if a river has rights, well, what if it doesn't want you as an attorney, right? I mean, I as an individual, you as an individual, we make the choice of who would represent us in a court of law, and maybe we would represent ourselves in a court of law. But now that we're saying a river or a mountain or, whatever it happens to be, it's in and of itself an individual, for lack of a better term, for just legally speaking. What if it doesn't want you to represent them?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and it brings up this idea of guardianship. And
yeah,
I've seen it personally. I've represented an elephant in New York courts, and so I've had this sort of thing raised against me, like, who said the elephant wants you? And that's a fair question. The elephant maybe could have got a better lawyer, sadly. But I think the larger question, the law is a beautiful thing in a lot of ways, because it has mechanisms in place. For example, if you're a child who's left without any parents or guardian, the system has a way to appoint a lawyer for you, mm-hmm. and their checks in place to ensure that they're actually, carrying out that individual's interests. And I think, not to oversimplify it, but a lot of those kind of principles apply. And, the idea is not that you just throw open the gates and people like me rush in and say what the river wants, but really that you give a voice to nature and help us move away from this very kind of exclusively human-centric vision of the law. Because at the end of the day, we're not just talking about the law as in like this sort of tablet, right? This traditional idea of etched in stone, here are the laws. It really runs deeper than that. It's philosophical. It's
sure.
a policy choice. It really gets to, I think, a growing awareness among folks that the way that we are treating the natural world is wrong and is ultimately going to be self-destructive. And so, you know, we're not here to prescribe exactly what the outcome is in a particular case or say that, you know, nature, quote unquote, will always win, because I think in reality it's much more subtle than that. It's much more nuanced, and it really is a kind of technical step of saying, hey, we can actually reimagine the law and take in a broader set of interests than just human beings and their corporations.
Well, and that last part, minus the legal part, I agree with you. I consider myself to be an environmentalist. I want us to be good stewards of the environment. I just wonder if, and I'll give you the last word on this, I just wonder if you would be better suited to go the route of, rather than changing our legal system or evolving, for your term, the legal system, if we wouldn't be better off just advocating on behalf of policies that are better for the environment. Because again, I guess what throws me in all of this is all land has an owner. So to say that they're no longer the ones who should be the guardians, I guess, of the piece of nature just doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I get, I think so much of what comes into this is the novelty. It does stretch the imagination a bit, but again, that's the beauty of the law, is that it can do those sort of things. I try to see the nice side of the law in all of it. And it really is about, you know, engaging this new idea, moving beyond a strictly human-centric view of the law. The Earth Law Center and many other great groups are working increasingly actually with corporations, because believe it or not, there's a lot of them that are interested in integrating this into corporate governance in various ways. We helped a company in the UK appoint for the first time nature through a proxy, of course, to their board. So there's this real interest. And I think once you start having other segments of society, like you said, pushing for policy, you know, it's not just really all about courts. Really, so much of it is about public education. Yep. And engaging with policy and really trying to, like I said, find a way to make the law catch up to, I think, what so many of us are realizing, that this human dominion over nature and control over it is not just kind of a fantasy, but it actually could be very self-destructive for us.
Well, I find this fascinating just as a debate. I don't agree with you on the legal aspect of it, but I certainly understand where you're coming from. Again, the name of the organization is the Earth Law Center. You can learn more about them at earthlawcenter.org, earthlawcenter.org. We've been talking with its counsel, Kevin Schneider. Kevin, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Of course. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show.